Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Welcome back. Top of the hour, 8 o'clock hour. You have got Jennifer Owen and Scott Aspenlife sitting in for Aaron Flint as he takes a little bit of vacation with his family. This morning, we are going to jump in and talk with Kyla Hailstone, who has been putting a lot of work in on court reform, family court reform, and has been instrumental in working on some bills to try to address family court. And one of those that's going to be coming here this next session is appropriately labeled Brody's Law. So, Kyla, we're gonna kind of intro this segment, and we'll hold over and pick up on the next segment. But thanks for jumping in and joining us this morning. Maybe can you give us a little bit a high level about what Brody's Law is and what Brody's Law hopes to accomplish?
Absolutely, and thank you for inviting me on here. I'm happy to talk with both you and Jennifer this morning. So I am the director of Montana Family Court Awareness Project, and as you had talked, we have been working for years on reforming family law to address gaps in our current laws where we can work on preventing family and domestic violence early on in these cases. And over the years, we have identified specific issues that we can address with legislation, and we have done that with Brody's Law. The purpose of Brody's Law is to increase the priority given to children's safety in custody proceedings, strengthen the ability of the courts to recognize and adjudicate domestic violence and child abuse allegations based on valid admissible evidence, and enter orders that protect and minimize the risk of harm to children. And as well as ensure the professionals that are involved in child custody proceedings involving domestic violence and child abuse receive the appropriate trauma-informed and culturally appropriate training on the dynamics, the signs, and impact of domestic violence and child abuse, including child sexual abuse.
That's a great kind of summation of Brody's Law and the need for it. This is another one of those uncomfortable conversations, Jennifer, that we just don't like to have.
That's right.
Here in Montana, and we've shied away from for far too long, and it's resulted in the situation that we're in. My family, this touches my family. Mm-hmm. My stepsons or my sons come from a domestic violence situation. My wife escaped, and it's part of the reason this is such a deeply personal and passion project for me to work with you, folks like Taya and Kyla on legislatively to try to correct and address. And we're going to come back with Kyla here after the break and talk more specifically about Brody's Law, what we hope to achieve this legislative session and kind of the path forward for our state, not just for Billings, but for the state of Montana. So we're going to take a quick break. Montana Talks, jumping back in here in a couple minutes.
This is Fox on Football. Week 16 of the NFL season brings a ton of quarterback changes, and none more notable than the Atlanta Falcons, who are benching veteran Kirk Cousins in favor of rookie Michael Penix Jr. Cousins has struggled recently, but the 36-year-old is accepting the decision made by head coach Raheem Morris.
You know, there's a standard that you know, I have for myself, and the team has for me, that unfortunately, I wasn't playing up to that standard consistently enough.
The New York Giants have announced that they will be going back to Drew Lock to be their starter, who missed last week's game with a heel injury. Meanwhile, the Tennessee Titans will start Mason Rudolph on Sunday, as second-year quarterback Will Levis will head to the bench. And the Cleveland Browns are going with Dorian Thompson-Robinson to start Sunday in place of Jameis Winston. For the latest NFL news, go to foxsports.com. For Fox on Football, Tony Genualdo, Fox News.
Did you get a call or message that mentioned Social Security that made you feel threatened or scared? That is not the Social Security Administration. Social Security will not threaten you, press you for personal information, or demand instant payment. Social Security does not accept payments by gift card, prepaid debit card, internet currency, or by mailing cash. Criminals use these forms of payment because they are hard to trace. Don't fall for it. Hang up, ignore them. Report this criminal activity to oig.ssa.gov.
U.S. taxpayer expense.
Hey, Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. We are going to take you into January of 2025 with some great content, great guests, great hosts, and of course, your phone calls. David Noble will be in the house. Scott Aspenlighter in the house as well. So stay tuned to Montana Talks right here on your favorite radio station on through 2024, right into 2025 with Montana Talks, the show where you get to talk and be heard all across Montana.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, welcome back. You don't have Aaron Flint this morning, but you do have Jennifer Owen and Scott Aspenlighter filling in for Aaron. And we also have on the phone Kyla Hailstone. We were talking before the break with Kyla about Brody's Law, a piece of legislation that's been in the works here in Montana for a couple years now, trying to rework the way that we handle domestic violence in custody cases in our state and the importance of that as it impacts our kids and sets them up for success in the future. You know, it's certainly impactful to the families, but it's more impactful in interrupting that generational cycle of violence. And from my perspective, that's, I think, what is so important about Brody's Law moving forward into this legislative session. So, Kyla, maybe give us a very quick version of the story of Brody and how Brody's Law came about, the background, so people can personalize why it's called Brody's Law.
So we, through the years of our research and looking at family law cases, we had discovered a pattern of abuse allegations being brought up in the custody matter, like for Brody Hill and his mom. And it was being combated legally with a manufactured pediatric diagnosis of parental alienation. And this is a way to discount and discredit the abuse cycle. And this has been very effective. And what we noticed happened, which did happen for the Hill family, was this is so effective that it puts the child in the primary care of the abuser. And the long-term effect on the children is horrendous. And we see what happens out of this for the children. The impact is we start seeing mental health issues. We start seeing acting out, criminal behavior. In the case of Brody, the impact of the abuse became so overwhelming that he took his own life. He couldn't take it anymore. There was no avenue of recourse. He was denied mental health care by his abusive parents. And ultimately, this led to him taking his own life because he felt there was no other option. And this is not a unique case. This is unfortunately common in the state of Montana.
Yeah, that's the tragic part about this entire situation and this entire scenario. And Jennifer, you've served as a guardian ad litem for a lot of years, and God bless you for doing that, because
that work is some of the toughest work. You're working on behalf of kids that can't defend themselves.
I think it's really hard for us to get our minds around what kids in Montana go through. You know, I raise kids here, you raise kids here. We do it because this is a safe community with good schools, a great place. But not every child in the state has that experience. And sometimes kids are navigating very complex, very hard, very adult situations, quite frankly. And we, as elected officials, as community advocates like Kyla, we have to come alongside these kids and say, you deserve better. And we're going to do our jobs as adults to make this a safe place for kids to grow up.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. So as Brody's Law moves its way forward, and Kyla, you correct me where I veer off course here, I believe Representative Jody Etchart from right here in Billings is going to be the bill sponsor and carry Brody's Law. Brody's Law was presented to the Law and Justice Interim Committee for the legislature, hoping that it would have came out as a committee bill, but There was still a little bit of work to do on the bill, so it did not come out as a committee bill, but does come out with overwhelming support as we head into the legislative session. And we
actually do have two sponsors. We have Jody Eckhart, representative in the House, and we have Senator Dennis Lynn as well.
Oh, another
this is very important.
Tremendous.
Both of them. Yeah, so we've got overwhelming support this year in really focusing on, I mean, Scott, you said it best. We need to disrupt this generational cycle of abuse because it continues.
Yeah.
It continues on into these children's lives as they get older, and then it's passed on to their children. And this is a way to disrupt that cycle and provide safety for kids. And I can't commend Jennifer enough for taking on that GAL role. We need more of you in family law to give children a voice, because unfortunately in family law, children aren't given a voice.
Yeah. And that's the, you know, I think that's the crux of it. I mean, this morning, as we've talked with our U.S. attorney and the work that he's done, and we talked with Commissioner Morse about what's going on with Yellowstone County and the criminal justice system, we need to remember that this stuff is generational.
That's
if we don't get out ahead of it.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly around domestic violence, we are, if we don't address it hard, address it fast and aggressively, we are creating the next generation of abusers.
Yes.
And abuse.
And it's not just repeating the cycle of violence. It's repeating a cycle of criminology. You know, we see here in Yellowstone County and around the state, youth violence, youth criminal activity is on the rise. And often, if not most of the time, you will find that those children are coming from a violent background themselves. We are incubating now the future of our communities, and we just have to do better.
Yeah. Kyla.
Absolutely.
Kyla, I want to thank you for the work that you've done with your group. Thank you for the work that you've done with the ladies and continue to do. Look forward to working with you as we head into the legislative session. Thanks for jumping on this morning and talking a little bit about Brody's Law with us. Important, more to come on that. We're going to take a quick break. This is Montana Talks. Jennifer and I will be back with you after the break.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
In these days of culture wars, you commonly hear disdain for those who don't work. Those who use a social safety net to maintain an acceptable lifestyle that doesn't involve holding a job are rarely respected, yet their behavior may be perfectly rational. That's because of something economists call implicit taxes. What, you may ask, does a person or family actually receive by earning an additional dollar of wages? Because of the myriad of cash supplement, housing assistance, child care subsidies, and other safety net programs out there that are income-based, the answer may surprise you. There are so many rules to all these programs. Social Security alone has 27-28 primary rules. That perhaps would make it more surprising if it were otherwise. The thresholds where earning an extra dollar incurs a penalty or puts you in a different rate bracket are incredibly harsh. Start making money and those implicit taxes add up to a lot. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
In the new year for the annual ball drop. The first New Year's Eve celebration in Times Square took place on December 31st, 1904, marking the opening of the New York Times new headquarters. The celebration featured a fireworks display, and the event was such a success that Times Square quickly became the new IT location to welcome in the new year, surpassing Trinity Church in Lower Manhattan. A few years later, the city banned fireworks, so the owner of the Times decided to replace the fireworks with a large illuminated ball. It was lowered from the tower flagpole at midnight on December 31st, 1907. Today, hundreds of thousands of people gather in the square, braving the cold to witness the iconic ball drop, making it one of the world's most famous New Year's Eve traditions. Matt Murphy, Fox News.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Welcome back. Welcome back. So you don't have Aaron Flint. You've got Scott Aspenlander and Jennifer Owen in this morning. Jennifer's around for one more segment, and then she's going to get on with her day and her actual career. but try to lighten it up a little bit in the last segment that Jennifer's on with us and talk about what we see coming forward in 2025.
Yeah.
So Jennifer had some thoughts. Why don't you lead it off?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we are looking, I think, at an interesting year. Obviously, here in Billings and around the state, we'll have some municipal elections that will be interesting. I think, here in Yellowstone County, we will hopefully have an opportunity to talk about a jail expansion. So there'll be some big local issues, some big questions about how we fund things. But of course, everyone's looking at the legislature to see what comes out of Helena. So
there's a lot on the docket there.
It is going to be exciting. What about you as we look at this beautiful Billings morning? What do you see as we look to the new year, Scott?
So let's talk about the legislature, and we've talked about a lot of local stuff, so let's talk about the legislature here. You know, everybody knows that Medicare expansion is coming, or Medicaid expansion is coming, and you know, there is a hot debate about that and
That's
the parameters
sure.
around it. The impact that it is going to have on our rural hospitals is indisputable. Even critics of Medicaid expansion would not argue the impact that it does have on rural medicine. I think at the end of the day, we're going to see an extension of Medicaid in some form or fashion.
Interesting.
I don't know that it'll look exactly the same as it's looked to this point, but I don't see a world in which even a Republican-controlled legislature is gonna walk away from Medicaid or some type of extension of Medicaid. And we can argue about the merits of that,
sure.
but I think the reality of the impact that it would have on rural medicine, even our hospitals here in Billings.
Yep.
You know, I think St. Vincent's, it would cost St. Vincent's like $72 million if we didn't do a Medicaid expansion.
Well, and you know, we've talked a lot this morning about public safety, and there's certainly an intersection there too. There are lots of people clogging up our system who really have substance abuse and mental health issues,
right.
and some of them are very dependent on Medicaid to access the services they need.
Right. That's 100% right. So that's one of my predictions. I think we're going to get some kind of Medicaid expansion or extension. What that looks like, you know, we're going to find out. The sausage making on that's going to be
ugly,
real ugly and messy.
One of the other things that I think we all know is coming, and we've talked about this morning, is this question of how much property tax is the right amount for the state of Montana.
Right.
So let me just ask you, we've spent a lot of time in my wheelhouse, which is law and justice. Let's go a little to your wheelhouse. How do you think the state is going to balance the desire for tax reduction, the fact that we have large surpluses, and these recent reports that are coming out about our crumbling infrastructure around the state? Where do you think the legislature is going to be making investments in the new year?
You know, that's a really great question. And if I had an answer to that, holy smokes, I wouldn't be on the radio and I wouldn't be running an engineering firm. But I think it's going to be very difficult for the legislature to balance property taxes and property tax reductions, which primarily fund local government,
that's right.
cities and counties,
mm-hmm.
not
schools.
The state,
mm-hmm.
but cities, counties, and schools. The state is primarily funded off of income tax
Correct.
And revenue from resources. So important distinction there.
as we listen to legislators talk about that, the state purse strings are generally funded through income tax and natural resource and business taxes. So as they look to put their hand in the property tax bucket and restrict local governments on property taxes, I think we got to be very careful about how fast we turn the dials there.
Sure.
I'm hoping that the legislature uses the fine-tune dial, not
the blunt hammer.
Yeah, not the big ship wheel spinning it in circles, because I think the ramifications are very wide. I hope that they look at something, a tool that maybe helps us see the, you know, curb the spikes. You know, maybe we look at a tool in which we can only see an increase of X amount, X percentage, so we don't see these 25% increases in property tax. I think we need to go back to looking at how often we do valuations. You know, we swung it from, I believe, 5 years to 2 year cycles of revaluing. That's had a negative impact.
Sure.
But I think we need to take a look at that. Maybe 2 years is too frequent. Maybe we need to look more at a 36-month or a 48-month valuation process by Department of Revenue.
And maybe stepping in.
Right.
Those increases.
Right. So I think as taxes go, and property taxes in particular, I think there are some things like that. But again, this is one of those situations in which you got counties like Gallatin County and Missoula County that are going to wreck it for everybody because of their inability to live within their means.
That's right. And that's a local government issue.
But Gallatin County and Bozeman County are going to wreck it for all of us. And the legislature is going to come in with a hammer, and they're going to start banging on things.
Yeah.
And restricting local government's ability because we've got some local governments who can't control themselves, Missoula County being primary.
Yeah, I think it's a real serious challenge. And hopefully we'll be able to advocate to our legislators that not all city governments are the same.
Right. Yeah, Billings is very different. I mean, we're a charter government, and we have a mill cap.
Mm-hmm.
So we can assess whatever we want. We have to live within our means, much like the state legislators do and having to balance a budget. You know, we just can't go assess more and more mills like Missoula County does.
But, you know, there's this ongoing tension in the legislature, of course, between urban and rural. What happens in the big cities is one thing. But, you know, I mean, you sat on MDT's Board of Commissioners and thought a lot about the investments that are necessary around the state. How do we get into our rural communities where they have crumbling roads and crumbling bridges? And, you know, there's just not the property tax base to support that. You're an engineer. How do you think about these things?
So forever, I mean, we have funded that based off of the revenue generated on the coal trust, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're not building that anymore,
right?
By the way, I mean, I don't know if anybody's paying attention, but we're not mining as much coal as we used to. And we're seeing that as funds go into the coal trust. So at some point in time, it may not be this year, it may not be in 10 years, we're going to have to figure out a actual funding structure for local infrastructure. And local infrastructure is different than our highway infrastructure. You know, mind you, 73% of our transportation funding comes from the federal government.
Amazing.
We are one of the biggest takers from the feds on transportation infrastructure.
And in fairness, we got a lot of miles of road.
We got a lot of miles of road. But, you know, as you start talking about the Trump administration coming in and looking at funding cuts, the money isn't going to be there like the money was there. They're already talking about cutting the bridge funding program. I'm here to tell you that the Department of Transportation has identified we have $500 million in immediate bridge work that needs to get done. That's just bridges. That's not your road. That's just your bridge structures. So when we talk about forecasting out $1 billion surplus this legislative session and sending everybody home with a $650 check to offset your property taxes,
yikes.
The real question is that the best use of that $650?
Right.
You know, as a conservative, it's hard for me to say, but man, in these surplus times, we need to be investing in our infrastructure to continue to build a solid base for the economic engine that we need to run this state. Sending me a $650 check, this is that West End attitude, right? A $650 check is more useful kept in the coffers to build our infrastructure to help my business succeed.
Well, and one of the things you and I have talked about is, you know, even if the legislature were to release all the funds that we need, do we have the workforce to build those roads and bridges? And one of my hopes for the legislative session is that we're going to see a real commitment to building skilled trade career technical education programs, to really encouraging kids. I'm a college grad. You're a college grad. There's a real value in it. But for lots of people, there is tremendous job opportunity in the skilled trades. And I'd like to see a little legislative commitment to that workforce development.
Yeah. Yeah, that is spot on correct. We have got to find the people to continue to support the infrastructure construction and frankly, just the construction in our communities.
That's right.
And the growth of our communities.
These are great jobs.
Yeah. They're given the opportunity to go back, I don't know if I would have done it the same way that I did it.
Right.
Going to engineering school and being an engineer. You know, my family had a HVAC company in Northeast Montana up in the tundra. And I don't know if I would have made the same decision. Knowing then what I know now.
Yeah.
Maybe I would have.
Maybe.
But I didn't understand the opportunity associated with the trades that I did. And frankly, I think the school systems have done a terrible disservice to kids in trying to convince you that the only opportunity that you have to advance yourself is if you get a college degree, which is absolutely bull honky.
We're just driving kids into debt and steering them away from what are frankly very good paying jobs. I mean, certainly when I was in school, that was the only message. If you're successful, you're going to college.
Right.
If you do something then other than college, you're clearly not successful. And that wasn't true then. It's certainly not now.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. It's an opportunity for us to take advantage of. With these times of surplus and you know, great economic times in our state, we have to make sure that we are being very diligent about looking at the years coming.
Investing.
That's exactly right. Because it isn't always going to be unicorns and roses here in Montana. We went through some of those years.
That's right.
We've got to be prepared for that cycle to come back.
That's exactly right.
So we'll see what happens with the legislature. I mean, God knows there is a million other things. I mean, hell, they had, 1,000 bills get drafted last year.
That's right. I've heard 4,000 in the queue already. It is shaping up to be busy for our friends in Helena.
Oh, man. Well, Jennifer, thanks for coming in this morning. Appreciate the time with you and your thoughts on this. Appreciate you jumping in studio with me. We're going to take a quick break. This is Montana Talks.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Welcome back. Obviously, you don't got Aaron Flint. I'm in the last 2 hours of the takeover of Flint's show. Flint's out on vacation with his family, and I appreciate the opportunity to come in and talk. So you've got Scott Aspenlander, Jennifer Owen sat in for the first 2.5 hours, and we talked about some heavy stuff. But important stuff, and I'm glad we had an opportunity to do that. But now, I've got my friend and advisor, Ty Elkin, in the room. Now, Ty is a investment advisor at Allied Investment
Advisors.
Yep. Right here in Billings, and Ty and I are going to talk a little bit about the markets. So It was actually an exciting year in the markets this year.
Yeah, it was hard to be wrong in the markets this year, Scott. But let me say before we get started, I feel like I am at the pinnacle of my radio broadcasting career right now. the pinnacle didn't take long to get there either. The one time that I'm on radio, I'm at the pinnacle here with Scott Aspenlander on the Aaron Flint Show on Montana Talks Radio, and I'm so happy to be here. Scott, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming in. And like I said, Ty and I, good friends, known each other for over a decade now, and back in Ty's days as a banker. And the reason I asked Ty to come on and talk with us today is he's got great perspective on the markets, having seen it as a banker, as an advisor of small businesses like myself when I got started, and now as an investment advisor over at Allied, and the work that Allied does, not just here in Billings, but northern Wyoming and across the state of Montana, frankly. So maybe give us a little intro of Allied Investment.
Yeah, Allied Investment Advisors is we're an independently owned registered investment advisor, which from my perspective was really important to me, Scott, as I transitioned out of the banking world. I worked for two outstanding community banks. I worked at both Yellowstone Bank and Stockman Bank. Both of them family-owned, locally-owned and operated, decisions made locally. I was able to make the transition from banking into the work that I do now at Allied Investment Advisors under the same ownership structure, under the same investment in culture and the investment in our people, and frankly, under the same auspice that if you put the client at the center of the business and the relationship, the rest of the things typically take care of themselves. And that's really what we do. There's 14 of us at our work. We do about 30% of our business is here in Billings, but frankly, we're all across Montana and northern Wyoming. We go all the way up to Scobie, Montana. We head out east all the way to Missoula, and we spend a lot of time in northern Wyoming. And really just sit down across the dinner table or the office desk with our clients, look them in the eye, shake their hands, find out what's happening in their world, because we feel the most important thing for us as we're working through the advisory part of our business is to really understand where our clients are trying to go. And then we design a portfolio according to that rather than the opposite. So, you know, we think that the relationship part is really the most important part of what we do.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And frankly, that's why our business works with Allied is the relationship. You know, relationships are important to me, and I think it's the key to why our business has been successful here in Billings, and I've had an opportunity to be successful individually, is because of the focus on relationships. And when you find partners in business and in retirement, frankly, that care about your success and build a relationship around that, it's a big differentiator
in the
marketplace. And that's one thing that Allied is certainly well known for. So let's talk about the actual markets and what we saw here in 2024. And then we'll talk a little bit about what we're looking at in 2025. So Ty, what were some of the biggest surprises that you saw, or some of the things that you tracked and think are worth noting as to what happened in 2024?
Yeah, well, if you look back at 2024, it really was a year that, as we came into it, so much could have gone wrong. You know, we were coming into what we knew was going to be a very polarizing election year. We had instability in the interest rate world. Interest rates had just come off a really historically rising rate environment, and really the anticipation of what impact that would have on the economy was nerve-wracking for many. So there was a lot that could go wrong, but frankly, none of it really did. We ended up, you know, we're up roughly 26% this year, which from a historical perspective, it's as good as it's been really in the last 30 years. 2022, we were down 18%, but in 2023, we had a great year, and again in 2024. So a lot went right in 2024. And we still have, if you look at from the macroeconomic level, we have strong GDP that's in line with where it has been running historically. We have very strong economic indicators in the employment markets. We've got inflation back where we think it should be, running somewhere in that 2.5 to 3% range. So we do have very strong underlying economic indicators. And I think those of us that would like to politicize the markets, I think it's really important to recognize that it typically is a mistake to try to politicize the markets, because that makes you think that maybe there's a market timing aspect to it. Frankly, history would say there's not. It's our job when we talk about relationships, our job in building our relationships is to make sure that we don't have emotional investors. And that could have been a big part of what happened this year if people brought emotion into investing. But, you know, historically, whether we have a Democratic president or Republican president, frankly, the markets perform relatively consistently. Again, this year was one of those years where we unsure of where it was going to go, but for all intents and purposes, it's been an outstanding year.
Yeah. One of the things that it seems to me, and I'm a novice, like I'm just a dumb dirt kicker from the tundra. Like I barely learned math in Culbertson High School and got an engineering degree in almost 8 years, it seems like. It was how long it took me to get through a bachelor's degree at MSU. So I'm a novice, certainly, when it comes to the financial side of things. But one of the things that's been surprising to me as we've been doing things in our community is the impact of the interest rate reductions. And we just saw another quarter point reduction announced by the Fed. And that has seemed to really jumpstart the market, or at least keep it at the pace that it was at. I mean, can you talk to kind of the impact of the interest rates and what the Fed's doing there?
Yeah, and I think the latter part of your comment there is really what happens. It kept it at the pace that it was at. And you're really, as long as we don't see surprises in the interest rate world, we typically see market behavior as expected. It's when you get surprises that the market just doesn't like. Typically, what we think is happening in the interest rate world is relatively known in advance of their meetings, or at least expected, and it gets baked into the market even before the announcement. And that's what really has happened over the last couple of Fed meetings. As we look forward, much less of a push for downward rate trends. In fact, the markets now are expecting just one rate movement at the May meeting. But that really kind of gets us back to historically where the Fed's rate has run. You know, we got spoiled over the last 5 years and had near zero interest rates, which frankly isn't healthy long term.
Right.
It felt good in the short run. But for long term economic sustainability, we really do need a more meaningful rate environment, and we're getting there. I think frankly we're pretty close to being at that level, and we've seen that if we move at a measured pace in terms of what happens with the interest rates, typically the consumer can figure it out and work through it. And as long as we don't stay too high for too long, which it looks like we were able to accomplish in this particular case, we're able to keep the consumer sentiment relatively strong, which is where we stand today.
Yeah, that's great. And one of the things that I think has been surprising to me is what you've seen, kind of consistent across the marketplace. Certainly there are sectors that have outperformed others and sectors that have underperformed. But as you look back at 2024, what are some of those sectors that you noticed really performed well?
Well, technology performed very well in 2024. In fact, we've, the phrase Magnificent Seven was coined in 2024 as, NVIDIA and Microsoft and Tesla and some of those high growth names really took center stage. It's led to a bit of a very narrow market, which frankly is a concern of ours and a concern of others. We have 10, the top 10 stocks make up nearly 40% of the S&P 500. So if those 10 stocks struggle or have a pullback, then we really see a pullback in the numbers. So, technology has been really strong. And frankly, who saw that coming under Biden? But it was really strong. Another sector that performed very well under Biden's administration was the energy sector, in large part because we had high prices, right?
But, right.
And what happens under Trump, I think, is yet to be seen. But really, Scott, I think what it speaks to, though, as we look forward, what is going to happen in 2025 and really under Trump's candidacy is we have to talk through diversification. Proper diversification is always the key to smart investing. If you chase high flyers, typically you're going to get stung. But if you say, I'm not going to bet on Trump, or I'm not going to bet on Biden or whoever might be in the presidency, but if you bet on a variety of sectors and industries, that really is smart investing.
Yeah. Great conversation with Ty. We're going to take a quick break and come back and pick it up. Ty Elkin with Allied Investment
Advisors.
God, I screwed that up. I've been on a heater this morning, and now I'm all tripped up. Anyway, we'll be right back with Montana Talks.
The conservative underground meets right now. This is the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
Washington Times reporting that Director Wray of the FBI plans to resign on or before Inauguration Day. He's calling it quits. He doesn't want to get fired by Donald Trump, according to sort. Well, it's obvious you're getting fired. And it's a sad thing because he had an opportunity after Comey to restore the FBI to its former greatness. And he didn't. And sadly, he has presided over what has now become the biggest national security threat self-imposed in our country's history by not enforcing our nation's laws and securing the border. That would have been in his purview. Spent way too much time working in a weaponized Department of Justice, going after moms and dads at school board meetings as potentially domestic terrorists.
Check out the Sean Hannity radio show later today, right here.
Hey, if you ever worry about the safety of your home, your family, there's no better time to act right now with Simply Safe Home Security. Now, one listener writes, quote, Because I had Simply Safe, the man who burglarized my home is now spending 6 years in a New York prison. And right now, you, my listeners, get 50% off any new Simply Safe security system just by going to simplysafe.com/Hannity. Now, Simply Safe has the technology to stop criminals from even entering your home in the first place with their exclusive Active Guard outdoor protection. Live agents keep watch outside your property 24/7. You get professional monitoring plans starting about $1 a day. Now, Simply Safe is extending their massive Black Friday deal just for you, my listeners. This week, you get up to 50% off any new system with a select professional monitoring plan. It's the system I have. You'll love it. Just go to simplysafe.com/Hannity. That's simplysafe.com/Hannity, because there's no safe like Simply Safe. Safe.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
In these days of culture wars, you commonly hear disdain for those who don't work, those who use a social safety net to maintain an acceptable lifestyle that doesn't involve holding a job are rarely respected, yet their behavior may be perfectly rational. That's because of something economists call implicit taxes. What, we may ask, does a person or family actually receive by earning an additional dollar of wages? Because of the myriad of cash supplement, housing assistance, child care subsidies, and other safety net programs out there that are income-based, the answer may surprise you. There are so many rules to all these programs. Social Security alone has 27-28 primary rules. That perhaps would make it more surprising if it were otherwise. The thresholds where earning an extra dollar incurs a penalty or puts you in a different rate bracket are incredibly harsh. Start making money and those implicit taxes add up to a lot. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the
Flash Radio. JabraEnhance.com/radio.
Brought to you from the Hot Spring Spas and Hot Tub Company, Friends Recommend Studio.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, welcome back. Aaron Flint's out on vacation, but you do have Scott Aspenlighter, and we're joined in studio by Ty Elkin with Allied. So last segment, Ty, you were kind of talking about some of the successes of last of 2024 and some of the sectors that we're doing that did well. Let's look ahead into 2025 and break out your crystal ball. You can give your disclaimer about not giving advice or whatever you got to do. I don't know what the rules are for you folks, but 2025, some of the things that you're excited to look at, follow, and watch as you look at the new year coming up.
Yeah. With Trump coming into office, there's a lot of talk of pro-business and whatnot, and historically the market has performed well under Trump. I would say, as you look back at 2016, you know, the market had just come off of just prior to Trump coming into office. The market was up only a couple of percent in that 2016 election year as he came in. This year, as he comes in, it's up 26-27%. So, you know, history would suggest that we can't continue on that same path, or that perhaps it would be very difficult to do so. So I think managing expectations moving forward is something that we're really focused on. You know, there's an old adage that the market always returns back to the mean, and the mean historically has been somewhere between 10% and 12% return in the stock market. So if you have a year where you're up 26%, you know, at some point, some sort of a correction is coming. And again, that speaks to diversification. So I think that's an important piece for people to recognize, is really to manage your expectations moving forward. We do have historically high PE ratios in the market. That gives us reason for some concern, or at least caution. PE ratios are running right now around 27, 28 times. Historically, the market has traded about 18 to 19 times. So on a historical basis, that's an area that I think people are focused on. But I would say, as we look back at some other historical factors that come into play, interesting to note, Scott, I have some data in front of me that shows, when we have a Republican-controlled Congress, the Dow typically gains, historically has gained 10% versus a Democratic-controlled Congress, 7.2%. Almost just the opposite when you look at in the presidency, the Democratic presidencies have performed just on the presidency alone 7.4% and with the Republicans 4.7%. So the fact that we have a Republican-controlled Congress is something that historically has spoke well to the success in the markets. So again, we have strong underlying, I think, macroeconomic indicators, but there are some areas in the stock market where we see fluff. The fact that we have a narrow trading market and that we have high PE ratios, again, and primarily led by technology and some of the tremendous growth we've seen in that area. It is a time that we do want to use good fundamental allocation structures.
Yeah, that is a great intro to me, again, being the dumb dirt kicker, asking you the million-dollar question that I don't even understand, mm-hmm. right? Everybody's wild about cryptocurrency. What are we doing with crypto? What are you seeing with crypto as we head in? We got 30 seconds. Can you give me your high-level take on crypto and where you're at with that?
Well, you know, of course, we're seeing euphoria over crypto. The problem with crypto for us as advisors, we're fiduciary advisors. We always have to do what we think is best for the client. And because we can't underwrite it financially, there are no fundamentals that we can point to. We have very little history. It is very difficult for us to give advice for somebody to move into crypto. It doesn't mean that it might not be an outstanding investment, but as advisors, it's an area that we really have to stay clear from because, you know, frankly, we know probably less than the person that we're talking to about it.
Yeah, and that's one of those spaces that, you know, I think young folks get enamored with crypto. I'm not a young person, and I'm not that enamored with crypto. I like listening to my advisors, Ty being one of them, and staying consistent with the marketplace. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to get to the top of the hour, and I think Ty's going to stick around with us a little bit. But we've got our friend, Coach Kevin Wooden, from Montana State University Billings, joining us. So we're going to be back at the top of the hour, Montana Talks.
Hey, Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. We are going to take you into January of 2025 with some great content, great guests, great hosts, and of course, your phone calls. David Noble will be in the house. Scott Aspenlighter in the house as well. So stay tuned to Montana Talks right here on your favorite radio station on through 2024, right into 2025 with Montana Talks, the show where you get to talk and be heard all across Montana.